Do you want a drink?
Yeah, sure, White Russian.
There's a special rung in hell reserved for people who waste good scotch.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
Try the wine.
You slip me a bottle of bourbon, a little glass, and some ice.
It comes in pints?
Oh, I'm getting one.
I drink, and I know things.
Hi, welcome to the Ruminations podcast. My name's Chris, and I'm here with Steve. And we are doing our podcast today on the Walt Disney Animation Studios films. This is our first podcast, and we would like to do more in the future on different topics like history, religion, politics, pop culture. So today we're going to talk about the 57 animated classics from the Walt Disney Studios. And in between segments, we're going to be playing songs from the Disney movies, usually their most famous songs or songs that we talk about in the actual segment. So now I'm going to pass it over to Steve to talk about the details of our Disney marathon.
We've been planning to do this podcast for about 5 years now. This whole process started in the summer of 2014. At the time, there was 53 movies.
Right, so, Frozen being the most current.
Frozen had come out in fall of 2013 when we were in college. So we started the summer after. We said, let's start the beginning. Watch Snow White all the way up through Frozen. And, of course, life got in the way. So it's taken 4 years, and four more movies have come out since then.
And I have to say, I'm glad that our last movie now is Ralph Breaks the Internet and not Frozen, because Frozen sucks.
So the most recent movie, Ralph Breaks the Internet, came out fall of 2018. I mentioned life got in the way. Chris here is a history teacher, and I am in publishing, but I have a film degree. So movies and history and religion are all passions of ours.
Right. So we want to, even in this podcast, we'll be mentioning things that are historical or theological that are, you know, present in the individual Disney movies. So
the reason we started the marathon was so that we could get the ebb and flow of the way Walt Disney Studios actually operated and worked, and how the movies
evolved over time. Like animation, voice actors that came.
Quality. So the first Disney animated classic is Snow White, which came out in 1937. And that revolutionized film because it was the first feature-length animated movie. Walt Disney won an Oscar for this special achievement, and they gave, I think, seven little Oscars.
Oh, yeah, for the, seven dwarves.
So that was the first Disney classic movie. So what constitutes a Disney animated classic is that it was a feature film produced by Disney Animation Studios.
Right.
The Walt Disney Company has a few different studios. They have Disney Toon Animation.
Right.
And Buena Vista.
Yeah. And Pixar.
And now Pixar.
So what we will not be talking about are movies like, one of the worst movies I've ever seen is Return of Jafar, or
The Brave Little Toaster.
Right.
Or A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right.
Toy Story or...
Right,
Iron Man, or any of the movies that come out under the Disney umbrella.
Right.
So what we've done is we watched the 57 movies in order over the last four and a half years. And now we have ranked them. So I came up with a list, ranked 1 to 57, so did Chris, and then we took an average, and we came up with a master list. So we will introduce the 10 worst and the 10 best of our master list based on our grandmaster plan of watching all 57 movies in a row.
Right, and then we'll talk a little, especially when it comes to the top 10. We were pretty similar, but there's a few deviations, so we'll mention them when we get to the top 10. But for the bottom 10, we're going to start with the best of the bottom 10 and work our way down to number 57. So we're going to start with number 48, which is 1963's The Sword in the Stone. So this movie ranked a little higher on my list than it did on Steve's, but I think we both kind of agreed it was pretty... dry.
So I did not grow up with The Sword in the Stone. I had always heard about it. I had seen trailers for it on my VHSs for whatever Disney movie when I was a kid, and I was expecting it to be a lot better, especially because it came at a time in the early 60s when the previous four or five Disney movies had been very high quality, and it was not.
Right. So now I don't know if I'd say I grew up with this movie, but I've seen it a lot earlier than you did. I remember when I first saw it, I really liked it, or I liked it enough, and then when we watched it again for this marathon, I was like, oh my god. Like, this was...
They make King Arthur boring.
It's like it's him King when he's, Arthur like, 10 years old. Like,
as a kid.
Right.
But you would think, based on whatever legend of King Arthur that you may have read or heard...
This movie should have been Quest for Camelot, which is not a Disney movie, right, but which is about King Arthur, and it's a lot better. And I guess here I want to say that I'm a very big Disney villain fan, so for all the movies that we talk about, if there is a Disney villain, I want to mention them. So the Disney villain in The Sword in the Stone is Madame Mim. So Madame Mim, I wanted to say she's maybe the best part of the movie, or... I don't know. Maybe Merlin's the best part of the movie, but Madame Mim...
I don't think anything in this movie is really good.
The only thing iconic about Madame Mim is that she turns into this purple or pink or purple dragon at the end, and Disney does kind of pay homage to that in Princess and the Frog. So in Princess and the Frog, the alligator, he kind of, like, pulls his head and, like, it stretches out, and it looks like Madame Mim when she's the dragon, I think.
I didn't realize that, and I think it's because I erased this movie from my memory.
Yeah, so there's a few things in there, but overall, The Sword in the Stone was,
yeah. But it's the best of the worst, because the rest are
pretty big.
Yeah. So at number 49, we have The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad from 1949. I would honestly say that the second half of this movie is better than anything in The Sword in the Stone. And that is the segment of the movie that's an adaptation of Washington Irving's The Legends of Sleepy Hollow.
Mm-hmm.
The first half is what...
The Wind in the Willows.
Is based on The Wind in the Willows, and that's The Adventures of Mr. Toad.
Right.
I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world, but there's too much of a... dichotomy between the two
parts
of the movie. It's not a coherent movie, so with one narrative. It's two segments, completely unrelated, both okay.
Right. The Wind in the Willows has a ride that's based on it in Disneyland.
And the ride is really fun, but it's also pretty insane.
Yeah, and you end up in hell, which is... you know, great when you go to Disneyland, and then you end up in hell with Mr. Toad. Because I think he gets into, like, a car accident or something.
Yeah, you're in a taxi cab.
He's a bad guy. You know, he gets... I don't know. He gets sent to hell. But the Sleepy Hollow end of it is definitely the better end. And it obviously has the famous flaming pumpkin head that gets thrown at Ichabod. And I want to say this is probably the most faithful adaptation to the book.
I think so.
Right. I love the Johnny Depp version of Sleepy Hollow.
And it's
but
completely
that is,
not.
That is not a faithful adaptation, but this is. And it's not, you know.
It's worth seeing.
It's worth seeing. The next one, number 50, is The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
Which, we'll just go, it's slightly better than the newer version of Winnie the Pooh, which came out in 2011. Right. So those are our 50.
So that's
and 50 51,
and 51.
And they honestly feel
they're
like the same movie.
They're pretty bad. I did not grow up with Winnie the Pooh. I mean, Winnie the Pooh is kind of like everyone knows who he is. You know, Winnie the Pooh, Tigger, Piglet. It's horrible. I'm sorry. It's like the best part of the original Winnie the Pooh is the Heffalumps and Woozles piece where Winnie, I guess, eats
hallucinates
bad honey and trips out. I mean,
it's a callback to the pink elephants on parade
from Dumbo. Right. So both of those scenes are pretty scary, especially for a young kid.
Yeah, the song is kind of catchy, but it's the only thing memorable from that movie.
We actually just listened to this song before recording the podcast, so it's very much in my head. But yeah, not a fan of Winnie the Pooh. I don't care about Christopher Robin. I don't care about his little fantasy world. Not doing it for me, Disney.
It's meant for little kids, and I really give parents a lot of credit that sit through them. So that being said, we've now arrived at a batch of movies that came out during and just after World War II, and these are the package films.
Right, so all these movies don't have a coherent story. They're little vignettes, and they're...
With some live action thrown in. And...
Yeah.
So the story for these movies, so it really doesn't matter what our ranking is, because
they're really hard to remember, to be honest. Yeah,
they all kind of blend together. So chronologically, you had two movies that took place in South America, which were Saludos Amigos and The Three Caballeros. They came out in the beginning of World War II when FDR instituted the Good Neighbor Policy. So the United States wanted to befriend the South American countries so they didn't become Nazi sympathizers. So those two movies took place in South America, and their little vignettes where Donald Dunk dances with the two parrots.
Yeah, Panchito and...
Jose Carioca.
Yeah.
And those two are better than the other three. And the other three came out...
I just want to say one thing about the Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros. These two I liked a little more because in Epcot, the Mexican Pavilion has the... ride in Mexico that is Donald Duck and the two other birds, and they're from these movies, so it was actually kind of nice to hear the song in the movie that I've always known from the ride. So that was a little
I didn't have that frame of reference, so
yeah, so I enjoyed that.
Were fairly forgettable. They were interesting enough because of the South America flavor to it,
right? They had something that was memorable.
That made them a little distinct, whereas the other three that came out as the war was ending and then just after the war, and they're three Fantasia knockoffs. You have Make Mine Music, Fun and Fancy Free, and Melody Time. They're all vignettes. Some of the vignettes are more famous than others. There's A Whale That Sings Opera. Mm-hmm. There's
Peter and the Wolf
starring Mickey. There's Jack and the Beanstalk, right, starring Mickey.
There's Jiminy Cricket is in there, so it's like, oh, someone from Pinocchio's in here.
Yeah.
He shows up. Our ranking for this, I mean, again, it's kind of arbitrary, but we had Three Caballeros, Saludos Amigos, then Make My Music, Melody Time, Fun and Fancy Free. So,
again, and that's really all we could say about these movies. As a cultural artifact of the 1940s, I really wouldn't recommend them.
I mean, we technically watched them, but I really don't remember much about these movies.
It was also 4.5 years ago.
I don't think I could have told you much about these movies 5 hours after we watched them. They were pretty bad.
All right. And so now we've come to our final and worst Disney movie.
And before saying it, I would say that there's a massive chasm between what we have is number 56, Fun and Fancy Free, and this movie. This movie is terrible. Okay, I when we watch it, I'm like, I don't know how this is a Disney movie. So, this movie, number 57, is 2005's Chicken Little.
And Chicken Little was the first Disney movie... Well, Dinosaur came out earlier, but it's the first of a string of Disney movies that relied on 3D animation as opposed to 2D animation, to the point where I think now they've retired their 2D.
Yeah. Their 2D style animation. But this movie's animation is noticeably different. This looks like a really bad Jimmy Neutron episode.
And the story is a really bad Jimmy Neutron story.
The Jimmy Neutron movie would have been a lot better than this movie.
Well, it's similar to it. It has somewhat of a similar plot.
I guess, but I enjoy Jimmy Neutron. This movie is so bad, I was floored. I never thought when we watched this that any of the movies after the 40s movies were going to be worse than that. And then we got to this, and I'm like, oh my god. Who dropped the ball?
The plot's incoherent. The world that Disney builds doesn't make any sense. You have all these farm animals living together, but it's not this fun world.
The tone of the movie is very odd. It starts out kind of like lighthearted, and then it like goes into like aliens trying to kill them, and it's like, where are you guys going?
Yeah, it's honestly one of the worst things I've ever seen.
I would never recommend this movie ever. And after we watched this movie, I looked it up a little bit more, and apparently in Disneyland they had a gigantic Chicken Little like blow up thing over Disney's California Adventure, and then it was a flop, I guess. So it's like, oh, we're just gonna kind of forget about that. But this movie's really bad.
It's an atrocity.
Yeah, it really is. I would never recommend watching this movie. So, thank God we're done with that.
Yeah, then. So stay away from the bottom 10.
Right. So now we're going to do our, like we said, our average top 10. So we're going to go from, obviously, 10 to number 1. So, our average top 10, number 10, was 1998's Mulan. So, Mulan, I guess, unlike most of the... I guess you want to say most of the better Disney movies is not based on, you know, a fairy tale per se. It's based on
Grimm.
Right. Or, it's not a Grimm's fairy tale. It's a Chinese legend. So I think there is some historical accuracy to Mulan being a real person.
I think so. It's kind of like King Arthur.
Yeah. So it's like a mythic person that has some traces in history. You know, it has Eddie Murphy as Mushu. He's I find very funny. You know, all the music in it is very good. So I'll Make a Man Out of You, Reflection. Again, to go back to my Disney villain thing.
I can never remember the villain's name.
So the villain in Mulan is Shan Yu. And so he's the leader of the Huns. And this really threw me off. So this came out in 1998. And I always grew up then thinking that the Huns were this nomadic Chinese group. And then I took European history in senior year of high school, and we're talking about the Huns, and we're talking about the Pope talking to Attila the Hun, and I'm like, what's going on? Because clearly the Huns are only in China.
Took some liberties.
Yeah, so Disney took a little liberty. So the Huns are not a nomadic Chinese group. They're kind of modeled off the Mongols, you know, horseback archers, but the actual Huns are from, you know, a nomadic group in Europe. But other than that, Shan Yu is the leader of the Huns, and he's good. He's not one of the best Disney villains, but he's
one-dimensional.
Yeah, exactly. He's
kind of just a hulking body.
Right.
He's an unstoppable force until he meets the strong, powerful woman.
Yeah, so Mulan, I feel like, is probably going to be a lot more popular in this day and age, because Mulan's a great character. She is, yeah, but she's, you know, she's bypassing gender and all these other things. Yeah. So she clearly has you almost want to say Mulan was ahead of her time. This movie would have been acclaimed if it came out now. So.
Right. Well, she fits the trope of, she's certainly not the damsel in distress.
Right.
And I feel like Disney kind of underappreciates Mulan, especially now that they're pushing a lot more female empowerment, which is not bad, but I think Disney sometimes goes overboard in their appeals to some political groups.
Right.
Whereas Mulan, I mean, she does everything herself. She literally saves the kingdom.
Right. And she gets thanked by the emperor.
So did Alan Menken do the music for Mulan?
No, so he did not do the music for Mulan, but Alan Menken is the, be-all, end-all of Disney music most of the Renaissance movies.
Yeah, I was under the impression he did Mulan's music, but...
Yeah, so it doesn't look like he did Mulan.
But he did do the movie we ranked ahead of Mulan at number 9, which was 1997's Hercules, right? I am correct in saying Alan Menken did the music for Hercules?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. So Hercules, I never saw the full movie of Hercules until I was in college.
Bad Disney fan?
No, I did see it as a kid, but I remember I was with my parents, and we were at a car dealership, and this was in 1997, and some guy was selling us bootleg movies, and my dad bought me Hercules on VHS, and the cover was printed out using like a Staples printer, and
the best kind.
The tape didn't have any writing on it, so I went home and we put the movie in, and the movie started halfway through the intro, so it's during the gospel muses singing. Okay.
So you missed, like, the narrator, like...
Yeah, I missed the first...
In ancient Greece.
Missed blah, blah, that.
Blah. I love that
part. So it started halfway through them singing, and the whole movie was just... Because it was before digital bootlegs, where people steal the DVDs and send them out and copy them. This was done by a guy...
Take your life into your hands and bring a camcorder into the movie theater.
This was done by a guy filming the screen. So throughout the movie, you actually see people get up and get popcorn and sit back down, walking in front of Hercules' face.
Well, my experience with this...
That was my experience, but I loved the movie. Right. I loved it as a kid, and then when I finally saw the whole thing, it was a revelation.
Well, I had a much more legal... introduction to this movie. So I remember my parents, I guess they bought it as a gift for me, and it was like a Saturday morning, and I came downstairs, and on like the table was the official, not a bootleg, official VHS of the movie, and I'm like, oh my god, and then I watched it like a million times.
I really liked the Titans as a kid. I was obsessed with the Titans.
I love this movie. When it comes to my area of history, I really like ancient history. Ancient Rome, ancient Greece. So this movie is definitely up there for me personally.
They use all the Greek names except Hercules.
Yeah, if this movie was historically accurate to the Greek, it would be Heracles.
But this is also Disney's trend to not be historically accurate.
Right. So, but which I have no problem with.
Yeah. For a kids' movie, it's perfectly fine. The story of Hercules is great. It's the hero's journey, but. He's literally the son of a god, so right. He goes from being a little nebbishy guy to the son of Zeus.
Yeah, so I think Hercules is probably strongest point, and again, I'm going to go to my villains, is Hades. So, Hades is amazing. So, James Woods plays Hades. He's this...
Talking a mile a minute.
Yeah, you know, fast-talking... New York car salesman, like he's
which you would think the devil would be.
Would you? I don't know. When I get there, I'll let you know. I just don't think it's gonna be James Woods. But he did a great job. So like
he doesn't have a song though.
No, he doesn't. No, you're right.
That's probably the only thing that's lacking in Hercules.
Yeah.
Hercules' song is really good.
They Go the Distance is amazing.
Meg's song is good.
Yeah, I Won't Say I'm in Love is great. The two, it's Zero to Hero and The Beginning, Gospel Truth, is the two songs by the Muses. And I guess the end song, too.
And then you have Phil's song.
And then, right, where he gets struck by lightning by Zeus. No, I love Hades, so... So, technically, in Greek mythology, Hades is not a devil. He's just the lord of the dead, the lord of the underworld. So they're clearly throwing in more Judeo-Christian vibe in this movie by giving Hades a more, I guess, satanic feel. But he's my favorite part. His loud, angry outbursts are things I experience every day, especially as a teacher. So yeah. I feel like my hair is going to turn into blue flame. I feel like Hercules is a movie that doesn't get enough acclaim from Disney. Like, I feel like...
Kind of fell through the cracks.
Yeah, this and Hunchback are two movies that just don't really...
I would say Hercules is more popular.
Oh, it's definitely more popular than Hunchback, but I don't see it a lot. Like,
yeah.
Like, you see Lion King all the time. You see Beauty and the Beast all the time. But Hercules is definitely not a movie that seems to get enough recognition, in my opinion. So, number 8... We have 1940s Pinocchio. Pinocchio is Disney's second movie.
In my opinion, it's the best Disney movie before 1991. But based on our combined ranking, it falls a little bit lower than my personal ranking.
Right. So your ranking had Pinocchio a little bit higher than I did.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Pinocchio. I'm not saying I didn't.
Yeah. It's a classic fairy tale, and it's... for 1940, it hasn't really aged. It's pretty timeless. I mean, yeah. The quality of filmmaking wise, it's actually terrifying at times.
Yeah, I mean the Pleasure Island scenes.
All the villains are terrifying.
They are.
The Stromboli's terrifying. He's the one who he puts Pinocchio in a birdcage.
Yeah, and he threatens to make him firewood.
Complete gibberish.
I know a little bit of Italian, and there's not a word of Italian in what Stromboli's saying. It's just
complete gibberish.
It's probably more incoherent than Peter Griffin's Boopity Boppity. Like it's just nonsense. Pinocchio is a movie that doesn't have one particular villain. There's multiple that show up. So it's Stromboli, it's Honest John, it's the coachman that takes the
coachman
children to Pleasure Island.
He's really scary.
Yeah, the coachman's probably the scariest guy. I mean, the whole, especially the Pleasure Island piece. So they're taking, it's this gray-haired old man taking these boys to Pleasure Island. Right, and then they turn into...
They give into their debauchery.
Right, and they turn into ass, so... So literally one of the scariest scenes in a Disney movie is watching Lampwick, who's Pinocchio's friend, turn into a donkey, and they're screeching, and you see his fingers turning into hooves, and it's like, oh my god.
And then Pinocchio's followed by Monstro the whale.
Monstro's probably my favorite, though. I love Monstro.
Monstro's like, also scary.
Monstro's amazing. I think I got when I was little, I got really interested in whales because of Monstro.
Yeah,
like
he
was, so I mean that whole thing is, you know, right out of, I guess, Jonah and the whale.
Yeah.
And they make a reference to it in Aquaman. So
if I were a Disney character, Pinocchio is kind of my Disney spirit animal.
Are you saying you're a liar, Steve?
No, I'm saying I'm a little idiot who gets into trouble.
Yeah, they get swindled by
everybody in my
by
life.
By everybody else.
I mean, it's an exaggeration, but I can relate to Pinocchio.
I want to say Pinocchio is the only Disney movie to take place in Italy.
It sounds...
I think so.
Sort of accurate. Yeah. Okay, so our next movie, currently at number 7, is... Sleeping Beauty from 1959, which I've always loved Sleeping Beauty. Its art style is extremely different than anything that came before it and after it.
So it looks like a painting. And I'll say before DVDs had their special features, my VHS of Sleeping Beauty had, after the movie was over, it had like this 20-minute segment of talking with the artist and he was drawing the paintings, and I was like, oh my god, this is so cool. Like, this, like, I've never seen, like, a special feature segment. The movie was made to look like a medieval painting. And this is coming from the Briar Rose fairy tale, so...
Who, she's in the movie, but she kind of takes a back seat.
Yeah, the movie's
more about Maleficent.
Yeah, so... I have to say, if you didn't have Maleficent in this movie would not make the top 10.
No.
So
I think art style, its art style's better than its parts.
Right. So,
but Maleficent definitely raises the movie.
Right. So in Disney villain fashion, Disney has chosen Maleficent to be their poster child of the Disney villain franchise. So she is, in her own words, the mistress of all evil. She, I want to say she's the only Disney villain to ever say the word hell. So she says, you'll deal with me, O Prince, and all the powers of hell, before she turns into a dragon at the end, which is one of the coolest Disney scenes ever. She's basically a spurned... She didn't get invited to Aurora's baptism, and she's pretty pissed off.
And she
puts a curse on Aurora, who's Sleeping Beauty, or she becomes Sleeping Beauty after that. And then they bring her into hiding with the three
fairies,
Flora, Fauna, and Merryweather.
I just know it's pink, green, and blue, right?
Yeah. Flora,
like the Powerpuff
Fauna,
Girls.
There we go. I want to say this movie is probably less music.
Well, the music is actually from the ballet. It's the Tchaikovsky music.
Okay.
They just added Once Upon a Dream. They added the lyrics.
Right.
But that music, I think, is Tchaikovsky's.
I don't know. Would you say this is the most medieval of Disney's movies?
Yeah, purely by look.
Yeah.
I mean, the other fairy tales that are set in that time period, you kind of don't know when.
Right, well, actually, this movie gives you a century. Because I think Philip says to his father, he's like, we're in the 14th century. Like,
well, that would be
I think he says 14th. So they actually place it in the 1300s. But no, I do love Sleeping Beauty. If you've ever seen the show in Disney World or Disneyland Fantasmic, the very end is Maleficent turning into a dragon. So this movie has a lot of current cultural resonance with Disney.
Yeah, the 1950s were a peak for Disney. You had the low point in the 40s, but then there were four or five in the 50s, and they were all good to great. And you could tell
the Silver Age.
Yeah, you could tell after Sleeping Beauty that the movies that came after it, Disney started going back downhill. Not that the movies were bad, but Sleeping Beauty was definitely a peak.
Right. And I mean, even, you know, Disneyland has Sleeping Beauty Castle.
Yeah.
Sleeping Beauty is very prominent in the, I don't know, Disney fandom.
Yeah.
So, moving on to number six is 1989's The Little Mermaid.
Which is one of the most influential movies. Probably Disney's second most influential movie after Snow White. Because Snow White was the beginning, and then Disney was really at its low point in the 1980s.
Right.
And
what do they commonly call the Dark Ages?
Yeah, and Sleeping Beauty really revolutionized animation. It was the first time what you were watching was basically a Broadway show on screen in animated form.
Right, yeah. Little Mermaid definitely starts the Broadway show formula.
And it ushered in Disney's Renaissance.
Right, so it's the first Disney Renaissance movie, and which I feel like is then followed up by a little bit of a glitch with Rescuers Down Under, and then it's all smooth sailing.
But Rescuers Down Under is also not in the same vein as any of the other Renaissance movies.
Right, but it's just odd. It's like they should have just switched. It's like, oh, Rescuers Down Under should have came out before Little Mermaid. The Little Mermaid definitely has like the big intro number of a Broadway show. It has the big number before intermission, which would be like Under the Sea, and then, you know, it has its
great villain song.
Yeah, it has Poor Unfortunate Souls. Ursula is a great villain.
I mean, her storyline is really dark also, stealing Ariel's soul.
Right, she takes her voice.
Right, well, the whole Little Mermaid is problematic today. I don't necessarily agree, but it's problematic because you have the main character who's the daughter of the king under the water, and she wants to become human to fall in love with a man. So she sells her voice to gain legs to woo the man. So she can't talk to woo the man, but she has legs to woo the man.
She's being a stupid teenage girl.
Yeah, and then if she's...
I agree with King Triton. It's like, sit down, be quiet.
Yeah, so whatever you may think of that plot line, the rest of the movie, you can't argue that it's not good.
Right. I mean, and then it also has, I guess, some of the most memorable characters, like Sebastian Flounder, are very memorable Disney characters. Under the Sea.
Prince Eric that memorable?
No, Prince Eric is not. Prince Eric... So, I want to say until, like, The Beast, the Disney princes are very one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Like, Prince Eric, Prince Charming, Prince Philip, they're all not that interesting.
Well, you have two Prince Charmings. You have Snow White's and then Cinderella's.
Right, yeah.
They're both
There's
pretty.
Not much difference.
Yeah. Well, no, Snow White's is literally a cardboard cutout.
Yeah, he is. He... At least in
the dwarves are very developed.
A few more lines. Prince Eric is not interesting at all.
But everything else about the movie is interesting,
right?
And
Ursula is amazing. She's a giant octopus. Octopus who turns into a giant octopus at the end. And I remember seeing some other people mention that. I guess she was a Disney character that was portrayed as being overweight. So they're like, oh, I can relate to her because I feel overweight and this and that, and like.
But she's also a villain, so...
Right, but she's also a fun villain. Like, I could go to a bar with Ursula. Like, she'd be really fun to go drink with.
the music is what all the songs from
part of your part of your world is probably one of the most famous Disney songs,
along with Under the Sea is also
okay.
And number five we have 1950s Cinderella, which is the first Disney movie since what, Dumbo, that we could say is actually good.
Right, so this is the beginning.
It's the first movie in eight or 9 years that is actually good, and I think it blows many of the movies out of the water.
So this one, I guess you would say, starts the Silver Age?
Yeah, so the Silver Age starts...
with Cinderella.
Yeah, so the Silver Age encompasses the 1950s and 60s.
Mm, yeah, so it starts with Cinderella.
And goes to Jungle Book, probably.
Yeah, so Cinderella is, I mean, I guess the classic... Disney movie.
Yeah.
Princess, well, the big castle.
The big castle in Disney World.
Yeah, so Disney World has Cinderella's castle.
Sleeping Beauty's castle in Disneyland is this little facade of a little building. Hut. Whereas the castle in Disney World is an actual castle. So Cinderella is just a great
really
movie.
Good. Like, it was.
All the characters are good. The stepmother is really evil.
The cat's amazing, Lucifer. Yeah, they named the cat Lucifer.
The cat is literally named Lucifer. The
cat's amazing.
The mice are adorable.
Gus is the fat
one. Cinderella's really sympathetic. You feel terrible for her. You feel great when the mice make the dress for her, and then you're devastated when the stepsisters ruin the dress, mm-hmm. and then you're elated again when the fairy godmother comes and bippity boppity boo. And
right, one of the most famous Disney lines ever.
Yeah. The music of Cinderella is great. It's a simple movie, but it's also there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, I agree. There's nothing wrong with it. It's probably the epitome of a classic. And probably like as when I was little, I'm like, oh, I can't like Cinderella because I'm a boy. But like, but it's really good.
Yeah, and the prince side of things, the prince, he's not the most developed character, but he's fine.
He's got more going on than...
But the king is funny.
Snow White's prince.
So. And the... I don't know. His aide, whoever the...
Oh, yeah, the guy with the monocle.
Yeah, I forget what he is. If he's a captain or...
Yeah, he's annoying as
well. Viceroy or something. He's funny.
Yeah, well, he's annoying. I like the cat. Lucifer's funny.
Yeah.
I love that. This is the fact that they named him Lucifer. Like, who approved
it's just,
that?
It's all symbolism that and Lady Tremaine and her house is a bastion of evil, and Cinderella's just stuck there.
That's true.
Until her fairy godmother whisks her away.
Right. Then if we move to...
Number four,
which is probably most people's favorite Disney movie, which is 1994, is The Lion King. So, Lion King, I mean, if you ever see an animated movie that comes out, they're like, oh, this is the best movie since Lion King. It's like, well, how many best movies since Lion King are there?
Advertising.
But Lion King is great. So, Lion King was, I think, a little higher on my personal list than yours, right?
Just slightly.
Just by one, maybe.
I think I had Lion King at 6.
Yeah.
And you must have had it at 3.
At 3, I think. But, I mean, Lion King is... I guess pretty original. Well, I shouldn't say it's original because there's a big controversy with the Japanese movie Kimba the White Lion. So I will say that I don't think the Lion King is original, but the Lion King is
based on Hamlet.
It's based on Hamlet, and it's also, I guess, revolutionary in the sense that it's like, oh, we have this really popular movie that's all animals. And It's like everyone's favorite Disney movie.
And it shares many similarities with everybody's favorite superhero movie, Black Panther, including the same exact third act.
Lion King is one of the few Disney Renaissance movies to not have the music done by Alan Menken, and it's done by Elton John. I want to say Circle of Life is probably the most famous Disney song.
Yeah.
Like, it's great. It's a great song. It has a great beginning with the sunrise and the big, like, bass drum beat at the end. It spawned one of the most successful Broadway shows. The Scar is great. So he has probably one of the best Disney villain songs, Be Prepared.
Literally has goose-stepping
Yeah, hyenas. He has goose-stepping hyenas. That's always, you know, fun. Scar's a pretty bad villain. When you, I mean, I guess you kind of overlook him because he's
a lion.
He's not a human. But he tries to kill his little baby nephew.
He drops his brother down into the stampede.
Yeah, silly me. But, yeah, but Mufasa's old. But Simba's really cute. It's like killing a little puppy. Like, how? Why would you do that?
Well, okay, he emotionally scars the little lion.
There's his name, Scar.
That leads to Hakuna Matata.
Yeah. I have to say, Hakuna Matata is, like, not one of my favorite songs.
Well, because like, it's so like, overdone, it's, but it's...
It's a song that, like, I just skip. I know everyone well, will hate me for
it's
that.
It's more a great part of the movie than...
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, Hakuna Matata has the transition of little Simba to...
Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. I will say I am not a Matthew Broderick fan. His voice is my least favorite part of this movie. I love little Simba. I love I Can't Wait to Be King. But no, Lion King is great. Especially when the ghost of Mufasa talks to... Simba towards the end. It's yeah, like, oh my god, just the music alone, yeah, and then the and then is, you hear James Earl Jones' voice, it's that's a pretty powerful scene.
I think its reputation speaks for itself.
Unlike most of these movies that do have spin-off movies, I like Lion King 2, Simba's Pride.
I have no opinion on it.
I feel like it's one of Disney's better spin-off movies. I think some of the
we're not here
good.
To talk about the spin-off
movies. I know, but Simba's Pride is I like it, so be quiet.
Moving on to number 3, this was the first animated movie ever nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards, and it's 1991's Beauty and the Beast. So Beauty and the Beast is, again, the music is fantastic, the animation really shines through. You could tell when Belle and the Beast are dancing that everything's generated by computers and
right
it,
and, but, like, but it not doesn't in a bad way.
Yeah, it doesn't look out of place, like right. Watching Oliver and Company, you could tell they were experimenting with computers for the background, and it's like, whoa, what's going on?
Right.
Be Our again, Guest, which is yeah, a great again, showstopper.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast has that Broadway formula.
Gaston's a great villain.
Yes, and Gaston is a great song. When you really think about Be Our Guest, it's like it's all happening on a dining room table. Like like it didn't occur to me as a kid, but
yeah.
At the very last scene in that song, it's like, oh, it's like this really isn't a big number. It's just these weird little things popping champagne bottles. I loved the Beast as a kid though. So and I always saw the Beast as the better quote-unquote villain than Gaston, because I thought the Beast was really cool. I never really... Like, Gaston was like... I'm like, he's a jerk.
I mean, that's his character.
I mean, I know, but like... He's like a dumb jock kind of jerk. It's definitely one of the most famous. You know, like we said, the music's great in Beauty and the Beast. You said it's the first one nominated?
It was the first one nominated. I think Toy Story 3 and Up have been nominated.
Okay. Yeah.
There might be another one, but...
And I did enjoy the live-action remake, too. Some people didn't.
Live-action one was fine.
I liked it.
It was stronger than the Cinderella.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
That's it for Beauty and the Beast. Then we'll move on to number 2, which... In recent years, I would probably rank this number 1. I can't go against my number 1, so... It unfortunately has to be... at number 2, and that is 1996's Hunchback of Notre Dame. It's very underrated. Not many people talk about Hunchback as being a great movie. They don't talk about seeing it.
It's a grossly underrated movie. Like, it's never talked about.
It's kind of been memory hold. Hunchback is one of the...
deepest.
Yeah, maybe Lion King is deeper...
I don't know. I would say Hunchback is definitely one of the deepest Disney movies.
It's Hunchback takes place in the Middle Ages.
Yes, it does.
So Hunchback is the story of... it's based on Victor Hugo's novel about Paris and about the Hunchback, Quasimodo, who's the bell ringer at Notre Dame. And it takes liberties with the novel. But its big set pieces are in the movie. Right. And
probably the biggest, well, I wouldn't say the biggest difference, but Frollo in the novel is a priest. He's the bishop.
And he's a judge.
Right, and they change him to the judge in the Disney movie.
Yeah, he's my personal favorite Disney villain. He, I think, has the best Disney villain song, and it's definitely one of the best songs in any of these movies anyway, called Hellfire. Mm. And it follows right after Quasimodo sings a song called Heaven's Light, and it's a great dichotomy between the two, that Quasimodo wants to be loved, and he's uncertain because of his deformities, but he's been graced by Heaven's Light, whereas Frollo is lusting after Esmeralda the Gypsy, and he's now fearing the fires of hell. It's incredibly dark and intense.
And I would say, from a Catholic theological perspective, that the sequence goes Heaven's Light, which you would have as obviously heaven, right, paradise. Then, before you get to Hellfire, they go to the Cathedral of Notre Dame, and you see the priest incensing in the cathedral, and they're singing part of a Catholic mass called the Confiteor, which is, I confess to Almighty God my sins. So you almost want to call that part the Purgatorio part of it, which then leads to the Inferno of Hellfire. So it almost gives you a Dante's Divine Comedy feel from heaven, going in the wrong direction, though. Going from heaven through purgatory to hell.
And the refrain in his song is mea culpa.
Right. So they're monks, I don't know what you want to call them, monks that are in red robes, and they're kind of like
they're more
judging
like,
more Frollo, like the and they're saying mea culpa, mea maxima culpa, my fault, my most grievous fault, in Latin. And really the song Hellfire is a kind of a prayer to the Virgin Mary to help him.
It's a prayer that turns sour at the end.
He turns vengeful and because he can't get what he wants. I guess this is why it's kind of a Disney movie that's not talked about much, because it's darker, it's deeper.
Well, Esmeralda's song is very good.
Right, God Help the Outcast.
Yeah, and the Bells of Notre Dame.
Bells of Notre Dame is amazing.
Yeah.
That's another, like, chill-inducing
song. The only...
I know what you're going to say, too.
It's not the biggest complaint in the world. I just think the gargoyle characters, they act as the Greek chorus for Quasimodo.
Right, and they're comic relief.
They serve comic relief. I mean, one of the voices is Jason Alexander.
Right.
So it's like how George Costanza is giving advice to Quasimodo in this dark, gothic tale.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me out of the movie a little bit. Their song is catchy.
A Guy Like You.
Yeah.
I don't personally mind the gargoyles. I like the gargoyles. I know what you mean by that.
I think their song should have come earlier in the movie.
Right.
Because after Hellfire and...
I mean the city of Paris is burning.
Yeah,
it's like
one
it's
of the
fire.
Lines in the song is
right. But he roasts the like a sausage.
Yeah,
on the fire.
Oh, look, Paris is so romantic. It's in flames.
Right. I think one of the coolest scenes in Hunchback is when they pour the lava out of the gargoyles onto the streets. But yeah, no, Hunchback's pretty cool.
And Hunchback has a more positive ending than the novel.
Right. The novel's very
Quasimodo doesn't die.
No, and Esmeralda doesn't die, and Phoebus doesn't die. Like, not everyone dies at the end of this movie.
No, the movie has a very positive message after
and he also doesn't get the girl, though.
No, which is realistic.
Right, which is different than most of your other Disney movies.
No, he gets acceptance. That's...
Right, he gets... Yeah.
He saves the day and he gets
acceptance.
I think
one of the saddest parts of that movie is him getting, like, egged and...
Oh, yeah.
Tomatoes thrown at him
after the Feast of Fools. Yeah.
You really feel bad for him.
And then,
for our final top Disney movie, this has been my absolute favorite Disney movie from when I was little, and I'm sorry, it's not never going to change. I have just an inherent loyalty to it. So this comes out the year that we were both born, 1992's Aladdin. So Aladdin is coming out of, unlike, you know, some of the Grimm's fairy tale stories, this is coming out of the 1001 Arabian Nights. It takes place, obviously, in the Middle East. As a history major, I love Middle Eastern history, and I want to say it all comes down to Aladdin, because I just immediately was attached to this movie. I just love the story of Aladdin being this, you know, street kid that's in a big city, and he's, you know, he's poor, and eventually works his way up to being Sultan, and, like, so...
The street rat becomes the prince.
The music in Aladdin is amazing.
Yeah, the music in Aladdin's really good.
Arabian Nights. I love the beginning. Just it almost sounds like an exotically sinister Arabian music with the smoke rising. A Whole New World is, again, probably with... I want to say probably A Whole New World, Circle of Life, and Under the Sea are the most famous Disney songs.
It'd be on the Mount Rushmore of Disney songs.
Yes, it would be on the Mount Rushmore of Disney songs. Aladdin also holds my favorite Disney villain, Jafar. My favorite scene in any Disney movie ever until the end of time will always be Jafar coming through the flames at the end, saying, after Aladdin calls him a snake, he says, "A snake am I? Perhaps you'd like to see how snake-like I can be," and he turns into a giant king cobra, and oh my god, I can't express into words how amazing that scene is. I don't know, I'm kind of just speechless. I love Jafar.
It's great, because we both have seen the Broadway show. I liked it more than Chris. I think it was Chris.
I've actually seen the Broadway show twice. I thought it was okay the first time, and then I saw it again because I got a cheap ticket.
But the best part of the show...
I did not like it.
The best part of the show is that the actor who played Jafar in Aladdin was playing him on stage.
Right, so Jonathan Freeman is the voice actor of Jafar, and I think he's still the voice actor of him on... the actor of him on the Broadway show. And that was kind of a surreal experience to listen to this guy that I know this guy's voice my whole life, and it's like, oh, I'm actually seeing him on stage. Jafar does have a song, but it is a little less than most of the other villains.
It's just a reprise.
So it's a Prince Ali reprise, and he has an amazing evil laugh at the end of it, where he's like screeching almost.
We're so caught up in Jafar, we're leaving out the big portion of the movie, which is Robin Williams as the genie.
Right, so, yeah.
The movie would be lesser without Robin Williams.
Right, would.
And the story behind that is I think when he was signed on, he didn't want his face or his name associated with the movie, or there was something where his name was not going to be in advertising for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But he is the movie.
Yeah, I mean, Robin Williams is amazing. So he's just coming out with all these one-liners that I'm sure...
Doing impressions.
He's doing impressions, like a Jack Nicholson impression. He does
William F. Buckley and Peter Lorre, and acts like a cheerleader.
Right. Jafar, he's our man. If he can't win it, great. Aladdin is amazing. I'm going to quote Davy Jones from Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End, which is a movie I love. I don't care what anyone says. And he says, so Davy Jones says to Calypso, "My heart will always belong to you." And that's what I have to say to the movie Aladdin. My heart will always belong to you. You will always be number one. Go, Aladdin. And I'm really cringing. I'm really cringing at this live action version. Yeah. I really despise everything other than the original movie Aladdin. Return of Jafar is one of the worst things I've ever seen. Aladdin and the King of Thieves is a little better, but it's like, I really just don't like any other adaptation than the 92 version.
Yeah.
So
that's our top 10. Before we close out, because I know we've been a little long, I think you have a few movies in your top 10 that didn't make the final list, and I had
as well. Right, I have one movie that I had in my top 10, and I think you had two movies, so I guess I could go first, if just for sake of time. This is going to be very unpopular, but I love this movie. It's 1985's, probably, I think it is Disney's worst performing movie ever, and I love it. It's The Black Cauldron. So this movie is very dark. It's
There's not a happy moment in the movie.
No. At the time, it may still stand that it's the only PG Disney movie.
Definitely at the time.
I mean, when I first saw this movie, it did scare me a little. This movie easily has the most evil villain. I mean, maybe Chernabog from Fantasia, but the Horned King in The Black Cauldron is so evil. Like, there is no James Woods to counteract him. Okay, this guy is, like, the devil.
Yeah, he's literally a skeleton devil.
Yeah,
he wants to overrun the world with an army of zombies.
Right, called Cauldronborn. I mean, it's so dark for Disney. I could see why, I guess, it did poorly. Maybe
you can also see why you liked it.
I could see why I liked it, too. But maybe it would have done better in a different time period. It doesn't have any music, really, at all. It's almost like Disney's version of Lord of the Rings, if you actually look at its story.
Yeah, and setting.
Setting. But I love The Black Cauldron, and I think everyone else should, too.
So the two movies that I had in my top 10 that didn't make it were at my number 5, I had Alice in Wonderland from 1951. I actually had it ranked higher than The Lion King, which will probably blow some minds. But Alice in Wonderland has always been a movie that I loved. I didn't know it was kind of a controversial Disney movie until I showed it to other people as an adult, and they told me they didn't like it as a kid, and I just found that weird. The whole movie, of course, is a trip. It's completely absurd. All the characters are insane. And
yeah. I grew up watching this movie, but I did not grow up liking this movie. I will say I like it now, and I liked it more when I watched it more recently. Because when we first started this, I'm like, oh my god, I hate Alice in Wonderland. And then we watched it, and I'm like, oh, I actually kind of liked it.
It's creative, and I think it's certainly more memorable than a lot of the movies.
Yeah. Pooka Smoking Caterpillar is great.
So. Yeah. And Cheshire Cat.
And Cheshire Cat's, yeah, creepy. The whole movie's just off-putting. I think that's really why most people don't like it, I guess, but...
And then also in my top 10, out of left field, I have at number 8.
It can't be out of more left field than Black Cauldron.
It's the complete opposite end of the spectrum. I have Emperor's New Groove, which came out in 2000. Emperor's New Groove was supposed to be another Lion King. It was supposed to be this dark epic about the Incas and... Pocahontas and Hunchback of Notre Dame did not perform well at the box office because they were more serious, and Disney changed course and they decided to make Emperor's New Groove into a slapstick comedy, and I think it's hysterical.
Yeah, I agree.
John Goodman,
he's a
David
pacha.
Spade and Patrick Warburton are all hysterical.
Yeah, I didn't grow up, I never saw this movie until we watched this marathon. I always was like, oh, that's one of those bad movies. And then we watched it, and I'm like, wow, I really like this movie. And so I really like Emperor's New Groove.
It's totally different than really
it's
anything
funny.
That came before it.
It's very funny. Yzma and Kronk are very funny.
Yeah.
Yzma, it's your birthday.
it's very visual in its humor. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any additional points you want to make about any of the movies? Now, I will include, wherever we post this podcast, I will include a list of our rankings, just so you can see what we didn't discuss.
Right.
So, basically, our top 10 were all great, but the movies that fell between 25 and 11 are all good and worth watching, and then really anything below that is forgettable to bad.
Right. And one of the movies I really love that's not in the top 10 is The Princess and the Frog. This movie easily could have been a Renaissance movie about, you know, the 1920s, New Orleans, voodoo. Yeah, it has great music. I love Dr. Facilier. I love his song, Friends on the Other Side. You know, a movie also like Robin Hood from 1973, I really like.
Which is an underrated movie, not too many people.
I loved Robin Hood. Any other movies you thought to mention?
No, I want to say that out of the three most recent princess movies, I think Tangled is the strongest.
Mm.
Frozen got all the attention, but I think Tangled is a little better. I think they're both better than Moana, which is, I don't know,
kind of forgettable. I don't get Moana.
I guess it's good for little girls and parents that have little girls, but it really didn't do much for me.
Yeah.
However, the non-princess movies, we both were not fans of Big Hero 6.
Okay, let me say, I despise Big Hero 6. I think it's terrible. I hate Big Hero 6. Every character's annoying. I can't stand that movie.
Whereas the two Wreck-It Ralphs are almost interchangeable. I really wouldn't be able to tell you which one's better. They're both entertaining, funny.
I really like both of them.
And then Zootopia was really good.
Yeah, Zootopia is very good.
Zootopia has a great song by Shakira.
It does. I've listened to it a million times.
Incredibly catchy.
Yeah.
And it just has a great upbeat message.
I also like the fact that the last movie we watched, which was Ralph Breaks the Internet, has the ensemble of the Disney princesses. It was almost like it was made to be a wrap-up
of this. For people that maybe haven't seen Ralph Breaks the Internet, Penelope,
Vanellope goes in, I don't know, she's on
the Disney website,
and she meets all the Disney princesses who are like, I don't know, doing something.
And she becomes a Disney princess. It's extremely meta.
Except for the ones that are dead, they're all the voice actors of the Disney princesses. And I just thought that was really cool. I'm like, oh my god, this is the last, before we do the podcast, this is the last Disney movie we have to see before we catch up.
It was a nice little bookend.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, other than that,
that's our list.
Yeah, so that's our list.
We hope you enjoyed it. If you want to undertake this marathon, I wish you the best of luck, because some of the movies are quite bad. But if you stick to the movies that are the first three or four Disney movies, from Snow White to Dumbo, jump ahead to the 50s, and then skip everything until, I guess, the 80s. Normally we would say the 90s, but I guess Black Culture's
amazing, so.
So, really, any of the 90s movies, and then, I don't know, I guess the movies from the Princess and the Frog is the last one that's really fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. If you've made it this far, thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening. We'll definitely be back to discuss maybe some heavier topics, just like politics.
Just like Black Cauldron alone. Yeah. Just like that. A whole podcast dedicated to the Black Cauldron.
So, we'll be back. So thank you for listening.
Thank you.